Support for the Front Row on FM 89.1 comes from the Community Foundation of West Texas and from Citibank. Citibank's wealth management team of advisors, private bankers, and trust officers help customers create personalized strategies to help connect with long-term goals. More information on Citibank Wealth Management is available at 806-687-2955. And from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vast opportunities abound in art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by vastly talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Vastly different. Pianist Richard Fountain is on a quest to perform all of the Beethoven symphonies in their transcriptions for piano by Franz Liszt. The next in this series takes place at Lubbock Christian University on Tuesday night, and we'll have all the details on today's show. I hope you can stay tuned. On today's edition of The Front Row, we're in the office and studio of Dr. Richard Fountain, who is professor of piano at Wayland Baptist University, and we are here in Plainview today with Dr. Fountain. Richard, welcome to the program. Thank you very much for giving us your time today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, many people probably know you as a pianist of the Lubbock Symphony, but this is your day job.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
This is where I live.
Right.
Well, I've been here at Wayland. This is my 11th year, and I am a professor of piano here. So, all of the things that come with that. I teach lessons. I teach the coursework related to piano, piano literature, piano pedagogy. I also do, a fair bit of collaborating here with our student vocalists, instrumentalists. I play for Dr. Steve Weber in our international choir. We were just chatting, we've just been on tour around the Panhandle doing some events there. And it's really quite a fulfilling job. It keeps me very busy. But I get to do a lot of different music, which is very inspiring and keeps the brain fresh.
Right.
When you're balancing so many different styles and ideas in your head, it keeps you keeps you going.
Absolutely. Well, you're in the middle of a big project.
Yes.
You're performing all of the Beethoven symphonies, and obviously you're not an orchestra, but you are performing the Beethoven symphonies in their transcription by Franz Liszt.
Yes.
And Liszt did this a lot. He loved to transcribe orchestral music and songs and chamber music and opera and all this kind of stuff. And here you are in the Beethoven symphonies. Tell us about these transcriptions.
The backstory is sort of funny. In high school, I used to go to music stores and, browse, as every nerd does, right? And there was a music store that was in the basement of a bank in Omaha, Nebraska, where I grew up. And we, the bargain bin, it's just this big box that's got a bunch of scores in it. And I remember running across the first volume of, Symphonies 1 through 5, Franz Liszt.
There they are.
It's very well loved. Right. And, I picked them up and thought, what a cool idea. I had no idea of the backstory behind those particular pieces at that time, but I thought, what a great, great idea. And, they sat on my shelf, for years. It was obviously beyond where I was at that point in my life pianistically. But over the years, I began to get more interested in, the orchestral life as one part of things. Starting in my undergraduate, continuing through graduate work, I developed a great love for orchestral music. Playing in the orchestra was part of it, but I've always loved listening to symphonies. I would go through, let's sit down and listen to the Dvorak symphonies this week, or let's sit to the Sibelius symphonies. And so it's been a part of the repertoire that I've always loved, even if I couldn't, literally be a musical part of it. So what this project came out of this idea that, next year is 2020, and that is, of course, Beethoven's 250th birthday, and there will be many celebrations going on all over the world, and, here in the Panhandle. I'm sure I know, actually, of several different projects that are ongoing just to celebrate that great musical figure. And I didn't want to do anything, it would take so long to do, for example, all 32 Beethoven sonatas for piano.
Right.
Not to mention, having to learn all of the, maybe a good lifetime project. But at this point, it was not something that is, very feasible. And I thought of these symphonies again, and I thought, you know, very few people play them anymore in the age of recordings, obviously. You know, even on my phone, I can go to Spotify, I can pull up, you know, Carry On, one of the, I can't remember exactly which year Carry On recordings they are, but that's kind of my go-to set at the moment. As you know, as well as all the Baroque orchestras and all these different takes on Beethoven. And so you, people think in a sense, well, why this? You know, Liszt obviously did them in part to evangelize, if you will, for Beethoven and for the symphonies, because, you know, even at the time he did these transcriptions, middle of the 1800s, you know, Beethoven was certainly very famous and very well known, but, you know, there were, his music was still quite revolutionary, and it wasn't, you know, exactly commonplace to be able to go and hear, you know, a symphony, a choral work live. Maybe if you had, if you happened to live in a place with a really good orchestra, that could be something. But, you know, most everywhere did have a piano. And so even, you know, if it wasn't a great piano, it was still a piano. And Liszt, as sort of, you know, the first, you know, apostle of the piano, I guess, if I could say that, especially as pianos were getting these big iron frames, wanted to show what they could do. And, you know, the repertoire that existed at the time, Mozart, Beethoven, Hummel, Weber to some extent, you know, it certainly is what it is, and it is wonderful, wonderful music. But he wanted to really show off, you know, now that this instrument has grown exponentially in power, in volume, in scope, you know, what better way to show it off and also evangelize for, you know, one of my idols, Beethoven, but then by turning his orchestral textures into a piano. So he did, I believe, the 5th, 6th, and 7th fairly early in his career and used them as, you know, touring showpieces to a certain extent. But again, also, I think we can't ever lose fact of, or lose sight of the, you know, the evangelistic part of what he was doing. He really did believe in the music he transcribed. It was not something that was just for him to show off at the piano, especially when he called something a transcription for solo piano. You know, he did this with the symphonies. He did this with the Tannhäuser Overture, with a few of the Schubert songs are fairly straight transcriptions. They're very, very different than what you see in, you know, the Don Juan fantasy, you know, Fantasy and Norma, these things that are just...
big sprawling.
Yes. You know, he used it as a vehicle to do a lot of fancy technical things. And, you know, he really wrote a composed fantasy on something. Right. These are very, very literal, down to even, you know, slurs, articulations, rests. There are very, very few places where it deviates from the orchestral score. And it's quite remarkable how much he was able to preserve there. It was also kind of surprising for me to learn that these are not, by any means, the only transcriptions of the Beethoven symphonies for piano. There were, I think, reading through Alan Walker's great biography of Liszt, I think he mentions at least a dozen other, you know, at the time Liszt was writing, there were at least a dozen other versions out there for solo piano. And, you know, none of them were obviously on the level that Liszt's were. And I think Liszt also saw that and said, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, this music will come across well when I do it. So that's a little bit of that backstory. With my own project, I decided to break it into 3 years. So I started last year. I performed the Sixth Symphony, the First Symphony, the Third Symphony. I did them in the order, I think, 1, 6, and 3. Thinking of, you know, you have to start with 1 and end with 9. And other than that, you know, it's sort of up in the air. I also tried to synchronize them with what we might be hearing in our own areas in those certain years. I'm also the principal keyboard for Lincoln Symphony Orchestra in Nebraska, and they happened to be playing the Sixth Symphony last season. So I, you know, I used that as an opportunity to perform that work up there. This year, I did the 7th Symphony, then the 8th Symphony, and of course, you know, the 5th is coming up shortly in this region. And that's, you know, the 7th is also something I think, in fact, yes, definitely Lincoln is playing the 7th Symphony, I think, in April. What is April? It really is. Anyway, and the I'll conclude the series next year with the 2nd, and then the 4th, and then, of course, the 9th at the end. Chorus to be determined. We're not quite sure how that might work or not in our particular with our particular resources. But so it's I'm splitting into 9 concerts over those 3 years, and I decided to pair the symphonies with a Beethoven sonata in the same key.
Oh, right.
And you know, it there are certain keys in Beethoven that are quite famous. C minor is one of them, which is the key of the Fifth Symphony. And they have this character to them, specifically in Beethoven, but sometimes across multiple composers. You know, D major and has a connotation of, you know, celebration and triumph. You know, think of Hallelujah Chorus, for instance, mm-hmm. other great works in D major. Partly, you know, I think to some degree it could, had to do with the fact that all the timpani and the trumpets
back in the drums, then were
in D major.
Sure,
in Baroque
sure.
times, at least, were D major. Yeah. I think the Bach Resurrexit, I can't remember if that's D major or not. Anyway, so I thought it would be an interesting experience for the audience to experience an evening on several levels. You know, obviously, okay, Beethoven Symphony, fabulous music, unmatched music. Also, since it is a piano recital, you get to hear a sense of the evolution of the piano, because you're hearing a piece originally written for piano, Beethoven Sonata, and now you're hearing the capabilities of the piano, as imagined by Franz Liszt, you know, reducing an entire orchestra. And at the same time, it is yet Beethoven. So you actually do hear Beethoven, you know, blown up. It's like almost Beethoven on steroids with
right.
these symphonies, because it really does sound like Beethoven. There are things, obviously, you know, the compass of Beethoven's piano did not reach to the levels that Liszt uses, with the exception of the First Symphony. He actually, you know, what Liszt did with the First Symphony could be played on one of Beethoven's, one of those, the pianos that Beethoven used. But you still do get a sense that, you know, this is really Beethoven's language talking to me. It sounds larger than normal, but it is still Beethoven. Liszt is, in a way, kind of the window through which we see the music.
Yeah.
And so that's some of the thoughts that I've had and the reasons that I've wanted to bring this project forward. And it's been quite a neat journey. It's been, you know, I suppose, obviously, it is quite a task to play all of this music and to perform it. But it's also, you know, a great joy to be in the middle of this, really, some of the greatest music ever written
sure.
you know, by anyone. Sure. I think that it's, you know, beyond question, especially when you talk about the Fifth Symphony, the Third Symphony, the Ninth right. Symphony. You can't really touch those.
Right, right. You spoke about how faithful Liszt is to the spirit of the music and even down to the articulations and things like that. Since they are Liszt transcriptions, I'm assuming they also, at the same time, are very pianistic. They probably fit in the hand well and play
yes.
well?
They do, actually. There are a very few instances, particularly in the 5th, 6th, and 7th, as I mentioned earlier, because he wrote them earlier in his life when he was still in the touring mode. One, I think, does have to make some allowances at times,
uh-huh.
but they're very, very rare. You know, there are maybe, a half a dozen times I could think of with the Fifth Symphony where, okay, instead of playing literal, you know, repeated chords at the speed that is required, you know, I can do a tremolo. And in fact, in the orchestral score, it is a tremolo. Occasionally, there will be something that is, you know, this octave really is up here. He wrote it down here. If it's possible to play it up here and still work, I think that works fine.
Right.
But other than that, it is remarkable how they do feel pianistic. As
right.
as you said, they fit under the hands quite well. And, you know, I do not have unusually large hands. I think I have very normal size hands for who I am. And, you know, it's quite manageable.
Great, exactly. Now, you have a concert coming up at Lubbock Christian University. Coming up on the 9th of April. Which symphony are you to at this point?
This is the Fifth Symphony. So
right.
I am at the, you know, one of the great, you know, masterworks of it's interesting, with each year I've kind of ended with one of the masterworks. Last year I ended with Eroica, this year with the Fifth, next year with the Ninth. And I've put the Opus 10 number 1 sonata with it, the earlier C minor sonata. I did think briefly of putting 111 with the Fifth Symphony, but I thought that might break the universe. It's a little bit, having that much profundity all in one evening.
Yes, right. Oof, yeah, right.
That might just be too much for the audience. And also, you know, the Opus 10 number 1 is quite a bit shorter, so it matches out quite well. I've tried to keep each one of these programs at or under an hour of music, if possible.
Yeah.
With the longer symphonies, it's more difficult, but this one times out at about 56 minutes of music. So it has, you know, the sonata to begin with, and we have the symphony. And, you know, there's no intermission. It's just a constant experience of music. I tend to talk a little bit just to kind of interact with the audience a little bit, make them feel comfortable. But there's no formal intermission. There's no, you know, I certainly don't, I hope I don't go on and on before I start playing. But yeah, it's, I try to keep it to about an hour. I think it's a very, I think that's a very good time for an audience. You know, right. I think it's a time where you can attend pretty well. We tend to be programmed nowadays to think in hours, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very manageable stretch of time for the mind. It's amazing. Once you get to about 70 minutes, 75.
I found, maybe this is just age, but I've found that I can still process things at an hour. An hour and a half, it's much more difficult.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
I know that there are these, you know, I remember a recital I went to in Vienna several years ago when I was at a festival. Daniel Barenboim played the entire book one of the Well-Tempered Clavier. It was pushing 3 hours.
Oh,
it was probably 2:40 or something like that. And of course, there was an intermission. That's a very long time.
Right.
I mean, and of course, world-class musicianship and such great music. But there does come a point where, you know, we are finite human beings. We need respite every now and again.
Right.
And I think that it's something that I've tried to do, even, you know, with a program that's not specifically a Beethoven symphony. I'm finding myself doing that even with my normal recital programs. It's just, you know, I think it comes across well. And, you know, better to leave people leaving and wanting more music.
Right.
Then, you know, you come out for the fourth encore and like, oh, would he just go away?
Right. So on the 9th at LCU, tell us where and when.
Absolutely. It is at Lubbock Christian University, and it's in the Allison Music Center, which mm-hmm. is their, you know, their music facility. It's in the same building as the McDonald Moody Auditorium. So for those of your listeners who know that space well,
right.
I know there are frequently lectures and a lot of guest events there.
Mm-hmm.
It is at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, April 9th. And it is, of course, you know, it's a free concert. Starts at 7, should be done around 8, as I said. It's just under an hour of music. And I'm very much looking forward to it. They've been very, very kind to let me come. I will have played all three of my concerts for this semester, for this year's cycle at LCU as well as Wayland.
Right.
As we like to say, we're rivals in many things in sports, but we do work together very, very well in music.
Right. There's an interesting thing that you have to go along with this concert. You mentioned that you play with Lincoln, and you have ties back to Nebraska.
Yes.
So tell us about that and the other thing that you're doing in conjunction with this concert.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in Nebraska, as I think I said. I grew up in a small town called Springfield. It's about 1,500 people, you know, maybe 20 minutes south of Omaha. So, you know, bedroom community. A lot of people commuted into Omaha. And, you know, went away to college, came back for graduate school, and then, of course, I've been here. So, I've, in a sense, a lot of my spirit has never really left. I mean, particularly with Nebraska, I think there is something about it that when you've lived there, especially when you're born there, you have very strong ties.
Mm-hmm.
It's reflected in a lot of different things throughout the state. And music is one of those things. Lincoln, where I spent 5 years for graduate school, is really quite a remarkable community. It has some... a ridiculous amount of arts activity for such a, I mean, it's very much the size of Lubbock, about 250,000 people. And of course it is the state capital, but there are, you know, playhouses and there are, you know, coffee shops with concert series. There are, you know, bands playing downtown, all kinds of very diverse kinds of music and art mm-hmm. going on. So I've always felt very much like that was a part of my family. And since I do still play for the Lincoln's Symphony Orchestra, I go back, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a year to play with them and, you know, do some other things around the state while I'm there. So I have felt very, very connected. Something that has happened this year that's been quite troubling. We had more than a 50-year flood, I guess.
Right.
I could put it that way.
Right.
I did not know this about my home state, but apparently we have more waterways per square mile than any other state. Mm-hmm. Is something that I read in the media coverage up there. And all of them have flooded for a combination of reasons. There was a very strong blizzard, and then I think there's just been a lot of freezing up, kind of upstream. We're in the Missouri River Basin and the Platte River Basin, and I think all of that kind of melting now and coming downstream has just, it's really devastated a large portion of the state. And it's been in the news, I've seen a little bit nationally, maybe not so much. I mean, it's obviously we're not a major media market. There's not a lot of people there. You know, there are more people in maybe 3 or 4 of the Dallas suburbs than there are in the entire state of Nebraska. But it is something that I felt, you know, affected by spiritually, if not physically. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do something to help. So I've decided to combine these concerts with the idea of a benefit for farmers, ranchers, rural residents especially. I've always felt very close to rural people, mm-hmm. Partly because I grew up a little bit in a rural area, but of course now I work in a very rural area here, Plainview in the Panhandle. And I decided to work through the Nebraska Farm Bureau Foundation, which has set up a disaster relief fund through their website, which is nefb.org. And one of the nice things about their fund is they've set it up in such a way where 100% of those donations go straight to farmers, ranchers, rural communities. So they're keeping their administrative costs and everything very, very low. And they have a structure set up where people can apply for those funds. I have a friend of mine, Nate Bloom, who I've known for quite a few years, and he's now on the, I believe he's the executive director of the Nebraska Grain Sorghum Board. Mm-hmm. In fact, the national sorghum producers, I think, are based in Lubbock, mm-hmm. if I recall correctly, out by the airport. And he was the first person I reached out to say, how could I do something to help and where can I direct these funds? And so he connected with the Farm Bureau with a lady named Lana Thompson over there. And we've been able to put together at least how the structure will work. So we'll be doing a couple of things. Obviously, we'll be taking donations, by check, preferably, since, especially if you would like the tax deduction, right, 100% right, right. tax deductible. Yeah, right. And we'll be doing that, obviously, at the door, afterwards, after the concerts as well. For the people who are online savvy, obviously, the website is a great way to do it. We will be live streaming the concert here at Wayland through our Facebook page. And that will be, available for a while. I don't remember exactly how long we keep our concerts archived, but so that's another venue by which people can donate. And, it's not really about a particular amount, or it really honestly is not, I really don't want to be trying to take credit for anything at all. It's just I wanted to find a way to help and also raise a little bit of awareness among the people around here who are very much like the people I grew up with, rural-minded, very agricultural, very close to the land, very friendly. I know that if something similar were to happen down here, it would be very much the same response. There right. have been all these wonderful stories back home of, neighbors helping out neighbors, neighbors without a bed because they lost theirs, being out, finding a bed for somebody else, not even for themselves. Right. There's everybody that is building this incredible support structure, people with the means to have airplanes or private jets even, or, they're flying supplies in and out of places that are surrounded by water.
Right.
All kinds of neat stories that I've been reading about. So, it's part of a way to feel like I'm still connected, in a sense, and also a way to give back, since I feel like, growing up there has really shaped a large part of who I am. It really shaped a lot of my musical self, especially my time in Lincoln. And so that's, it's a large part of my identity. So I feel like this was a way in which I can say thank you, however small.
Right. Excellent. Great. Concert Tuesday night, April 9th at Lubbock Christian University, the Beethoven Fifth Symphony, along with the earlier of the C minor Beethoven sonatas played by Richard Fountain. Richard, thank you for your time today. You've been incredibly generous, and we've had a chance to come to Plainview and be with you in your studio. Thank you very much for being on the front row.
Oh, you're so welcome. I appreciate it.
Today's edition of our program will be on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm Clint Barrick. Thank you for tuning in and listening.